You're tuning in to the Wild, Weird, and Sometimes Normal podcast. If you have a story or a guest recommendation that you think others need to hear, email me at wild, weird, and sometimes normal@gmail.com. Let's get this started. Alex and Brett, kick it!
Sometimes normal.
On this episode, I'm joined by author and paranormal investigator Brian Clune. He is the co-founder of Planet Paranormal Radio and Planet Paranormal Investigations. He has been involved with numerous TV shows, including Ghost Adventures, My Ghost Story, Dead Files, and Ghost Hunters. Our conversation covers Brian's volunteering on the USS Iowa and the ghost he encounters on the ship. We also discuss his ghost hunting adventures and some of his findings. Give Brian a follow, check out his books, and let him know you heard him on Wild and Weird. Enjoy the show. Are you looking to buy a home in New Jersey, escape the city, and move to the suburbs? Finally purchase that vacation home on the lake or down the shore? Maybe you're one of the lucky ones who are retiring and moving out of state. If so, let me help you. Keller Williams and the Real Estate Professional Group have what you need to make your goals come true. Reach out and have a conversation with someone who will put you first. Contact Brian McCoach at 856-321-1212 or email brianmccoach@kw.com. Are you looking for CBD for your pet? My friends at Pure Pet Wellness have what you need. They use the highest quality ingredients. While other companies may use synthetic oils in their CBD, Pure Pet Wellness uses organic ingredients. Organically grown hemp, organic coconut oil, organic shea butter, organic beeswax, and that's just to name a few. A family-owned and operated company that also offers fast shipping. Go to purepetwellness.com for all your pet's CBD needs and use the discount code WILDANDWEIRD at checkout. That's Wild, A-N-D, Weird. Treat your animal right. Go to purepetwellness.com. Welcome to another episode of Wild, Weird, and Sometimes Normal. I'm your host, Brian. And today my guest is Brian Clune. He is the author of the Haunted America series, and he is a paranormal investigator. Welcome, Brian.
How are you? And I'm kind of hoping that there won't be too much normal in here.
Well, even when we get normal, we get weird. So don't worry about that.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. I would say the most normal thing here, you spell Brian the right way. We have two Brians doing it the right way. We don't put this fake vowel of a Y in there in the middle. No. We use the B-R-I-A-N, the only way to spell it.
It's funny you mentioned that because I was talking to another Brian today about, you know, being able to do the interview in the goat locker here. And he spells his name with a Y. And I just looked at him and said, well, at least I spell my name the right way.
I'll refer to them as fake Brians. You know, the ones with the eye, I feel like we connect better right off the bat because we have this fake one trying to infiltrate our little circle.
But, exactly.
We're all good Brians. So I appreciate you coming on. You are, from locations unknown right here, you are in a fun place right now. Where are you?
I am on board the USS Iowa. It is the lead battleship of its class. I am in the Los Angeles Harbor. We are a museum ship. And the ship is kind of interesting because it is also quite haunted. So I do love working here. Not necessarily for that, because like we had talked about before the show started, I am a history nerd, and that was my main reason for being here. But it was kind of fun to find out that it does have a little bit of haunting activity.
This is just the cherry on top of the sundae. Like I'll take Absolutely. The history stuff and be like, oh, there's some ghosts. Like, I'll take that. So before we started recording, you said you were going to go storm the quarters and we're going to take this thing for a spin. We're going to drive live on the podcast here.
Absolutely. Right? And I've got my water skis ready.
So, perfect.
It should be fun.
Awesome. I'll be there in no time and I'll be drugged behind. Don't worry about it.
Sounds good.
Yeah. All right. Let's dive in.
We'll make a stop at one of the bars in Catalina.
I don't know if that's gonna be a stop or a stay. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. We'll figure it out as we go.
Yeah. Catalina. So I interviewed somebody. And they live off, they're in San Diego. So they're about Catalina Island. And they just talked about that there was interesting and weird history there. And there were some, I don't know if you have any information on this or you have thoughts on it, but they just found that place very unique to them.
Catalina?
Yes.
So one of the things that I thought was interesting, my publisher had asked if I had ever thought about doing a book about Catalina. So I did a little bit of research and I found it interesting that 96% of everybody that lives and works in Avalon, which is the main town on Catalina, claim to have ghosts in their establishments or their homes.
Really?
Yeah. So it's apparently a fairly haunted island. So one of these days I am going to have to get over there and start doing some heavy research.
Yeah, that's fascinating. So let's talk about your ship that you're on now, the Iowa. What ghost experiences have you heard about or have you experienced on there?
So my main job here, I volunteer as security. So in the mornings, I'll open the ship, I'll close the ship at night, and then I also work what is called fire watch. And what that means, when we have youth groups that spend the night, we have two people that work fire watch. So we're awake from 10 o'clock until 6:30 when we leave. And our job is to make sure that the guests are safe, that the guests aren't wandering, that there's no fires on board. So we're literally like all over the ship. And it's kind of amazing what you'll hear and see at, say, 3 o'clock in the morning. We have a spirit on board that we've dubbed the Whistler, because he just whistles. Nobody's ever actually seen him, but you'll be walking through one of the passageways and you'll just hear somebody whistling a tune. We're not even sure what era he is from, because he will whistle tunes from the 40s, 50s, and we've even heard him whistling songs from the 80s. So we're not really sure exactly who he is, but he seems to be in a very good mood. He whistles a lot. A couple days ago, I was opening the ship, and I was the only one on board, but I heard snoring coming from the bunks. So, you know, thinking, okay, well, I wonder if a homeless person got on board or something. I better go check this out. I followed the snoring, and there was nobody there. So, you know, we've had all kinds of weird little things like that. Nothing majorly spectacular. We do have a spirit that we've named Shaft Alley John. He is an African-American gentleman who passed away during the construction of the ship. And the reason we call him Shaft Alley John is he passed away down in Shaft Alley, and he is known to haunt that area and the area of the decks above it. And he's actually been seen by guests and crew both. And he seems to be a nice guy. So, you know, no worries. We don't have any spirits here that are harmful or anything, but maybe a little mischievous. We have a redheaded kid in the Admiral's Bridge who likes to turn the lights off on the kids when we're doing night tours. But other than that, you know, it's pretty interesting and you know, nothing overly scary.
So you have Chef Alley John, that's what his name is, right?
Yes.
Okay, so you have Chef Alley John, and you have this redheaded child. So
Not a child. He's a former crew member.
Oh, okay. He's a redheaded kid. I'm sorry.
Yeah, at my age, everybody's a kid.
Everyone's a kid. He could be 20, he could be 5. I wasn't too sure where we were going with this.
He has actually shown himself to me twice. Once I was trying to close up the door, and pardon the whistle, these go off every once in a while. And I was trying to lock the door, and I was having trouble getting the padlock done. And when I looked up, he was staring out the window at me. And it was just like really brief. And I was kind of like, you know, it kind of startled me, but, you know, there wasn't anything harmful in it. There was another time in the bridge when I reached around to turn one of the light switches, and he grabbed my hand and pulled my hand off the light switch. And then there was one other time that I had just shut the lights off, and I was walking from port to starboard to go out the door. And I look at one of the windows that I was walking toward, and I could see him behind me. And when I turned, naturally, there wasn't anybody there. You know, and it's just little things like that. And I didn't know who he was, but one of the gentlemen, he's like third in charge of the ship today, was on board during the Turret 2 explosion when 47 sailors lost their lives. And he goes, oh, yeah. He goes, he's a redheaded kid. He goes, I know him. But he won't tell me his name. And it's driving me crazy. It's like, tell me his name, for Christ's sake. You know, because I open up in the morning and I just say, yeah, good morning, kid. So.
Do you think you could interact with him more? Do you think this is something controllable, or, you know, this could be.
So I've tried. And the only thing I can say is I was pulling out the signal flags for the overnight group. And the signal flags are stored in the flag bridge. And that's where this sailor, you know, spends most of his time. And we weren't planning on having an overnight for about, if I remember right, about two and a half months. So I was up there, I got the flags out, I went back to put the chains up, and I told him, I said, hey, kid, we're not going to have anybody here for a while at night. So, you know, if you want to have a little bit of fun with the scouts tonight, you know, go ahead. And if not, just, you know, scare the hell out of them. And that was it, right? So I get a radio call at about 9 o'clock, and it's one of the tour guides, and he goes, Brian, do you know how to turn the lights on the bridges? And I'm like, yeah, I turned them on earlier. And they're all, yeah, but they both went off at the same time and scared the hell out of the kids. And neither one of the tour guides knew how to turn the lights on. So I had to go up there. And for both of the lights to go off at the exact same time, they're two decks apart. So it was like, yeah, no. So I just thought that was kind of, so I was kind of wondering, it's like, oh, I guess he listened to me and decided to give the kids a little playful scare. So it was kind of cool.
And when you first said that the ship was haunted, I didn't know what to expect. And then I was going to ask, you know, like, what are the normal noises that you hear, like, just during the day or throughout, you know, an experience? Because, you know, it's on water and, you know, there's waves, even like little ones, wherever it might be, and just creaking and everything. But now you're talking about, like, full body apparitions. Do they look whole? Like, when you saw the redheaded kid through the window, did it look like a person? Solid. Did it look solid? Okay.
Yeah, he looked solid. And then when I saw him behind me, it was kind of hard to tell because all I was seeing was a reflection.
Right.
However, excuse me, a few years back, two of the guys that I work with had been tailing a tour down on what is called Broadway. That is third deck. So it's two decks from Main. And at that time, it was fairly restricted for anybody going down there because we had completely opened the ship yet. That's how long ago this was. Now, the two security guards had stayed down there to make sure that nobody had gotten left behind on the tour group. And they did their final sweep to make sure nobody was left behind. And they came up to second deck. And they said that they looked down and they saw a sailor staring up at him, but that he was wispy. Is what the term that security guard used. And we were like, what do you mean wispy? And he goes, well, we could see through him. And we were like, okay. And now we were back up on Main deck. According to the one security guard, I'm saying one, there were two of them, but I'll get to the other reason why it was only one that said something. He said that this spirit that they said was coming up the ladder to second deck. So they hightailed it down to the aft ladder on second deck, but they said that they could see him following him down the passageway on second deck. He had come up from third deck and was following him. They got back up to Main. They said they looked down the ladder and they could see him. He wasn't coming up to Main, but he was just standing there staring at them. Okay. Now, the two security guards could not have been any different. The one who was telling the story was like a little kid who had just gotten his favorite toy. He was, you know, just rattling off what had happened. You know, we're just like staring at him, you know, getting amused. The other security guard, we looked at him and we were all, so is that what happened? Now, this is a direct quote from the other security guard. And we just lost it. We just started. He could not even talk. And we are just cracking up. He's getting madder and madder as we're cracking up, but he still couldn't talk. He was that nervous about seeing this spirit. So seeing the two together was just hilarious. And yeah, we don't let either one of them forget.
Yeah. I'm sure, you know, not everybody believes in ghosts, you know, and even if you do, you know, it's, you know, hey, if you see Bigfoot in the woods, like, what are you going to do? You know, are you going to run? Or are you going to like try to talk to him? And even if you're like, oh, no, like, I'd be fine with a ghost. And then all of a sudden you start seeing a sailor who's not supposed to be there. Like, I'm sure they could, you know, that's why you have the opposite reactions. But that's pretty fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's like I said, it's actually kind of fun. Like I said, once you realize that the spirits here are just, you know, guys like you or I, and they're like, you know, not harmful or anything. It's just like, yeah, we just sort of consider them crewmate. So.
And you can take an extra break. You're like, oh, Chef Allie John's got my shift. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. What do you think? I was probably gonna get this later in the episode, but we'll just do it now. Like, what do you think? Why do you think they're trapped there? Why do you think they're there? Like, do you think this is like an in-between world for them?
You know, that's always the question, isn't it? And I think that's one of the reasons that a lot of paranormal investigators do what we do is specifically because we want to know, are the spirits trapped, or are they here because of their own free will? Is somebody keeping them here? We really don't know. I think in a lot of cases, it's free will. But whether that free will is driven by the fear of the unknown or because they're just comfortable in a location, it's hard to say. With the spirits here, other than Shaft Alley John, most of them, we believe, are from the Turret explosion in 1989. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that, but on April 19th, 1989, the middle gun of Turret 2 exploded, and it killed 49 men in the turret and the barbette leading down. We do know that the redheaded kid is from Turret 2, and that comes from the gentleman I was talking about, who is still a crew member here, who said that he knew him. He was a friend of his. So, you know, I'm not really sure. I do know that, like, on the USS Hornet, I've been up there and investigated. I've also done research on the Hornet for a book, and I'm doing more for a new book. They're there still doing their job. And I think a lot of that might have to do with their dedication to their duty. If you look at most of the military ships that are museums here in this country, I don't think there's a single one that is not haunted. And most of them all have similar stories, that the guys that are still there are still doing their job. So whether, you know, it's a residual haunting due to some trauma and it's just, you know, like a videotape on the ether, or whether they're there still literally doing their job because of their dedication, it's still hard to decide, you know, why they're there. So, you know, that I think that's why most of us, you know, who are actual investigators rather than ghost hunters are still doing it.
Yeah, that why is a big thing. You know, obviously, but it's like, did they not have the proper closure? Like, say, that's her two explodes. Like, you didn't go to work that day or report for your shift or whatever it might have been. I mean, you know, you never really expect to die. But at the same time, maybe that was like just such a violent, unexpected thing that like, they haven't fully processed it.
Yeah, you know, that could be part of it. Yeah.
You know. And then time, you know, time exists here just so the trains run on time. But, like, you know, there is no time. So to them, this could be 3 minutes after it just happened. And for us, we're looking at it like, oh, it's been, you know, 89. So you're, you know, that's been right. 30 years. It's been 35 years, you know, but for them, that could be a blink of an eye.
Yeah. And that's one of the things, too, that I've always found kind of fascinating. And I'll use an actor by the name of Ramon Navarro. I don't know if you're familiar with him. He started off... He was a contemporary of Rudolph Valentino, and he was actually one of Rudolph Valentino's lovers. A lot of people don't know that Rudolph Valentino was either bisexual or homosexual. No one's really positive of that. But Ramon Navarro was brutally killed in 1969. And his home, after his death, he was killed at his home by two idiots. Let's just say criminals are not the smartest people in the world. They had seen him on Johnny Carson, and Ramon was talking about he had just finished remodeling his house, and he said, well, I've got $5,000 in my living room alone. Well, they thought he was saying that he had $5,000 hidden in his
cash, as opposed to just, you know, redoing it. Oh, my kitchen cost $80,000 or whatever it might be.
Exactly. So they beat him to death trying to find the money. Okay. So he actually stayed at his house after his death. At one point, I don't know if you remember Connie Chung.
Oh, yeah.
She tried to do an interview there. She did manage to get the interview done, but a lot of her crew left because Ramon Navarro was still there kind of messing with them. So the last people who bought his home decided, well, enough of this ghost stuff. We're going to tear the house down and we're going to get rid of the ghost by doing it. Well, as a lot of people know, that doesn't necessarily work and could actually make things worse. So they tore the ranch house down, built this new house, and now Ramon is still there, but now they see him walking through walls. Instead of just being in the bedroom where he died or, you know, out in his living room, he will literally walk through the wall to get to where he's going. So to me, that shows that to the spirits, at least, there's something different. They're not seeing the current
layout of the home.
They're still in their old home.
Right. He thinks he's walking down the hallway and you're like, he just walked through the bedroom wall. It's like, yeah, that's exactly. His hallway. He was going to the kitchen.
Yeah, exactly. So
that's fascinating. My small ghost experience that I've had, my aunt had a new construction home in Pennsylvania and we would go there on the weekends, especially in the summer. She had an in-ground pool. It was beautiful. A little McMansion type thing. And she had an extra bedroom. So we got there with my parents and my siblings. We just kind of crash on the floor around them or go sleep in the basement, whatever it might be. And the one morning I woke up, it's probably 6 o'clock in the morning, and I hear a vacuum downstairs. And so, you know, go downstairs for breakfast and, you know, I see my aunt and I was like, why were you vacuuming at 6 in the morning? She's like, oh, you heard the ghost. So I kind of thought that they were joking a little bit. And, you know, her husband comes down. He's like, oh, no, we have a ghost. And there were times we would sit around the dining room table for breakfast or lunch, whatever it might be. And everybody in the house is in that room in the dining room. And you would hear somebody walk down the stairs. You could hear the steps creak of the body weight shifting from step to step. And it would get down to the last step. And you would turn around expecting them to turn, because it would lead to the little hallway, little entryway. And nobody was ever there. Like, oh, that's the ghost that happens all the time. So it wasn't a malicious ghost. It wasn't really playful. I mean, I guess the vacuuming. It didn't really vacuum. There were no vacuum lines when we went down there. So he wasn't being productive. But, you know, he wasn't malicious or anything like that. But also, it was a new construction house. So maybe they ripped down something before to put it there. I'm not too sure what the development was before then. But that ghost was just haunting that, you know, that land.
Well, I hope you guys trained her to actually use the real vacuum.
If it was my house, I would have. Like, hey, do some chores, check out this stuff, do the laundry. Yeah, but
here's the feather duster, you know, go over there.
Yeah, just do it. I don't care how you do it. Just get the cobwebs up there. I'm not climbing up on a ladder. Yeah,
then you'd start to wonder, okay, why are these books falling on my head when I'm trying to sleep?
Yeah, that's it. You're not going to pay the ghost, not slave wages here. But I always found that interesting. That was, you know, and that wasn't even like, you know, I guess it was real because it happened. But, you know, I would say on the level of experiencing a haunting, that was pretty low.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. But that's another one of the things that I have always found fascinating is the, I don't know if you want to call it time displacement or what you want to call it, but the fact that some spirits, you know, are still to them, say in the medieval times, and that they haven't moved on yet, other spirits from the same time period have kind of grown with the times and, you know, they're now, you know, doing things in a modern way rather than, you know, still back in their medieval times. It's really kind of, you know, what is the difference between the spirits? Is it mental? And I know that sounds weird, you know, is it mental for a spirit, but you have to imagine that in a intelligent haunting, as we call it, that, you know, they're still thinking. So, you know, is it a matter of them, you know, being so stubborn that I'm not changing, or them going, hey, this is kind of cool, I'm going to change for modern times? You know, it's just another one of those things that I hope I can find out at some point before I die.
I think we're all going to find out the answer. You just hope to do it before, you know, you get the main answer, right?
Exactly.
So, and I, you know, and again, this is all just speculation, like obviously, and I think this might go back to the suddenness of the person's death. You know, maybe they're not ready to, you know, they don't realize that they're not there. Whereas opposed to if, you know, maybe you're slowly, whatever it might be, you know, you die in your bed, you have cancer and you're bedridden, whatever it might be. And there's a choice somewhere, possibly, you know, at that time, like follow the light or stay here. And at that point, that person's more aware of like making that choice.
Right.
You know, I don't know. Yeah.
Well, there's a spirit on the Queen Mary. Planet Paranormal, that's my team. We actually dubbed him Grumpy. We're not positive of his name, but the reason we call him Grumpy is he likes to growl at people. He's relatively harmless, but every once in a while, you'll be walking through the pool area or somewhere close by and you'll just hear, bleh! That's Grumpy. Okay.
Is he seasick?
We're not sure, to be perfectly honest with you. I joke about the fact, and you know, pardon the vulgarity of it, but he broke my paranormal cherry.
Uh-oh. Someone has to do it.
Yeah, somebody had to do it. He growled right in my ear when I was in a 3-foot-wide corridor, and my earlobe vibrated. Okay? Everybody else was cracking up, said I ran, but I will never admit to that.
I walked with purpose.
I did. I walked with definite purpose.
To get out of there.
But we had a psychic, and I'm not big on a lot of psychics because I think there's a lot of frauds out there, but there are some legitimate ones. And the person who mentioned this, I believe, is legitimate. He said that he was a murderer who had murdered there was a prostitute murdered on the ship at one point, and we believe this was the guy who did it. And he committed suicide as they were about to arrest him. Okay. And he did it underneath the stairs in the first class pool area. So the psychic also mentioned that he's not going to move on, that it is his choice, because he is afraid that if he moves on, of where he will end up. So because of his guilt over murdering this prostitute, he's afraid that he's going down rather than up. And so he's sticking around just to hedge his bets.
Just to stay in the in-between world.
Yeah, exactly. Which, to me, is not a bad choice considering the option.
Right. The alternative wouldn't be that great.
Yeah.
A little warmer, possibly, but, you know, then you know, maybe stay on the QE, but I don't know.
Yeah, it's not that uncomfortable here in sunny California, so.
Yeah. So there have been times, I wish I could pull the stories up. There's two stories. One was a child, and he had all these memories of this actor, Hollywood actor, but from like the 50s. And the gentleman was kind of obscure, but the kid like knew the guy's entire life story, knew the siblings. I think they even introduced the child to the sister of the Hollywood, not a star, Hollywood actor who passed away. And like she confirmed a lot he was saying, like nobody would even know that. Like it's not in history books. Like he didn't make Wikipedia. And so they were like, well, you know, this kid's reincarnated as him. And that was interesting. And another one was the child was born and grew up a little bit, and he went to the police and solved his own murder. I don't know if you've heard either of those stories.
I got to look that one up.
Yeah, I'll try to find that one up. I can shoot that over to you. But he went and like only something, you know, two people know it, the guy who was murdered and the guy who did the murdering, and was able to connect the clues for the police and led to, you know, the guy's arrest. So,
yeah. Well, I don't remember her name, but it occurred over in England. It was a girl who, as she was growing up, she would tell her mother these different things. And her mother was like, that sounds really familiar. And over time, she started to realize that what her daughter was telling her were things that she had heard from her grandmother that had happened to her grandmother's mother, so her great-grandmother. And that there was no way that her daughter would know any of it. So she started to believe that her daughter was actually the reincarnation of her great-grandmother. And I mean, I'm kind of up in the air as far as reincarnation goes. I don't know one way or another. Just that some of it makes sense, other parts of it don't. You know, and you can even go biblical if you want, as far as reincarnation, because, you know, the Bible was kind of written by men with all of their prejudices and everything else, you know, and a lot of it's probably parable. If you consider that the human body is basically 95% electricity holding together 5% of matter, and that your thought patterns are nothing but electrical impulses, and physics proves that you cannot destroy energy, and our body is energy, where does that energy go? So who knows whether, you know, ghosts are just still here because they haven't found a suitable body to inhabit. And that could be everlasting life, is the fact that we just keep moving on. You know, people say, well, then how come there's more people here? Well, you look at the universe, there are, pardon me for sounding like Harlan Ellison, billions and billions of planets out there. And let's face it, some of them have people on them. So
has to be, or some type of life form, you know, that has the same electricity.
Yeah, exactly. So who knows? Maybe we're reincarnated from this planet over there, and then we move over here, and then we decide to stay here, or we decide, hey, let's try this planet. You know, who knows? I mean, it's a big mystery. So
yeah, I go back and forth on, you know, what happens after death. Like hey, would it be nice that there were the pearly gates and St. Peter's there, and he's checking his clipboard, and I'm there. He's like, hey, Brian, come on, you know, come on board. Like, great. You know, and you see your family and friends, like, at what age are you seeing these people? And like, you know, that gets a little weird too with it. But then, hey, we're also all energy. So do we go to this all-encompassing light and just pureness of light and everything else? And as I just told you, two stories that, you know, I mean, very lightly prove reincarnation of these people knowing things that they shouldn't know and right. Coming out. It also seems that if that was possible, you know, there'd be a lot more, even just your circle of friends, wherever you talk to, wherever it might be, like, they're like, hey, like, I have these like weird dreams, like that are like, seem so real. You know, I have like these weird memories that like definitely didn't happen in this current lifetime. But, you know, I've never had those conversations with anybody, and maybe not having the right conversations. I just feel like they would come up a little more. You know, a lot of the taboos, you know, even through, you know, 80s, 90s and early 2000s have really been broken, you know, and a lot of the things that were fringe or, you know, unconventional, or you don't, you know, the secret handshake, make sure you guys talk about the same thing. I'm like, hey, you like ghosts? Oh, I like ghosts too. But now it's like pretty normal to just talk to anybody, be like, hey, man, I'm a ghost hunter. Oh, I have a podcast and I talk about ghosts and Bigfoot and UFOs and, you know, anything else. You know, I feel like you just hear a lot more of that. But, and like, we just really don't.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I have sort of a weird way of thinking about death. I've had friends whose spouse have passed away, whose brother or sister has passed away, and who I've been close with, and I don't get all broken up. And it's not that I'm, you know, happy about it, but to me, it's like, okay, well, in my own mind, I know 100% fact for myself that, yeah, we go on. We can go on. In what form? I don't know. So I know death is not an end. I also know that when I die, I don't want people to feel bad. I want to have a good old-fashioned Irish wake. I want everybody happy and drinking, because guess what? I'm not paying bills or taxes anymore.
Celebrate it.
Okay? You know, so it in a way, being a paranormal investigator has actually been helpful as far as my views on death. Now, let's face it. I am still terrified that I'm going to have a bus run over me, slam the brakes on, and smear my body. But, you know, other than that, you know, the death itself is kind of like, eh, okay. But it's weird because a lot of people look at me and like, well, why aren't you sobbing? Why aren't you crying because so-and-so died? And I'm like, because, you know, there's a good chance I'm going to be talking to him later. So, you know, I know it's kind of a weird way to you know, look at things, but yeah.
That's part of, you know, that's part of your job of what you do. If you're out there, you know, investigating paranormal, you're running across, you know, it might not be people that you know, but you're running across people, spirits, entities that somebody did know, you know, so that kind of gives that, you know, that eternal hope. And we also talk about, you know, energy, you know, isn't destroyed. And, you know, time, you know, 100 years here is like forever sometimes. And then I look back, I'm like, man, I'm this old already. Like, I still think I'm in high school sometimes, you know, it's just crazy. In a blink of an eye, like, I have a crystal clear memory of doing something with friends in high school or college. It's like, man, that was 20, 25 years ago. But it went by in a blink. And I look at my kids. I'm like, how are you this old? Like, I was just holding you. Like, I was just at the hospital with you. And like, you know, this is crazy. You know, so the 100 years here is long sometimes. And also it's super fast other times. And like knowing like, hey, wherever it is at the end, like, you know, pearly gates, stay here for eternity or go to the big light in the sky and decide to come back, or just, you know, have the best seats in the house to watch the, you know, Earth 2024, the best program on television.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, like what you were saying about memory, memory is nothing but an electrical impulse stored in your brain. So where do those impulses go when the brain stops working? You cannot destroy energy. All you can do is change it. So it has to go somewhere. And who's to say that the thought patterns don't coalesce? And that is what a spirit actually is that condensed memory and thought and everything else. You know, one of the things that I get a kick out of is the way ghosts are. Now, television ghost shows, I've been on quite a few of them. I'm not a big fan of them because they don't really know. Well, I can't say they don't know what they're doing, but because of the way entertainment has to work, they have to change things. So we do know that ghosts need some sort of energy to be able to manifest. Okay. Now, the way they do that is to draw in the energy that's surrounding the area. Okay. That's why batteries will go dead. That's why, you know, you'll get cold spots because it's drawing all of the energy in that they can. And let's face it, heat is nothing but energy. So as it draws the energy in from the heat, you get a cold spot. That goes along with the thought patterns and thought processes needing that energy to be able to expand. But one of the things that drives me crazy about that is when you see on these ghost shows, oh, there's a cold spot. Oh my God, look, the EMF is spiking. There's a ghost. No. If the EMF was spiking, it would be putting the energy out, not drawing it in. And I mean, that literally drives me up a wall. It's like, okay, you have an EMF pump to put out energy so the ghost can use it, and you're worried about the EMF going up. What? It's like, yeah, sorry.
Well, you have a half hour of television, well, 22 minutes, whatever, you add some commercials in. If it is the episode of, hey, we're going to go explore the Iowa and look for ghosts, and 22 minutes in, like, yeah, we didn't really find anything. Maybe tune in next week. We're going to go somewhere else. Don't know if anything's happening there either. You know, so you have to give the people a little bit of the crumbs. I think the ones who tune into that are kind of looking maybe for a little more of that, as opposed to if you're doing general, legitimate.
Right.
Not that these people don't do legitimate, but you're doing general, legitimate science research into it.
Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not. And if it sounds like I am, I don't mean to be bashing these TV shows because they are entertainment.
Right. Well, it's entertainment. Right.
So, but if you look at the first 3.5 seasons of Ghost Hunters, what you were talking about is exactly what happened. Oh, we didn't find anything. Tune in next week. Oh, we didn't find anything. Tune in next week. Oh, we didn't find anything. The first 3.5 seasons was like that. Every once in a while, they would go, oh my God, look. And they would find something. And that is more akin to legitimate, real ghost hunting. You know, I tell people when they say, well, what's ghost hunting like? I said, well, it's basically sitting around for 3.5 hours talking to yourself, twiddling your thumbs, and nothing happens. Well, then why do you do it? Because in 3 weeks, I'm going to be at a place and something's going to happen and I'm going to go, oh my God. Right. So it's that one tiny bit of evidence that you get that makes it worth it. I know that sounds kind of weird, but here's the thing. If it was true, and this used to drive me nuts on Facebook. You would see somebody say, oh my God, I just went to this location. It was the most haunted place I've ever gone to. And then the following week, oh my God, I went to this place and it was the most haunted place I've ever gone to. And week after week after week, every single place they went was the most haunted place they'd ever been to. My team actually put up a Post at one point that said, we must be the worst paranormal investigators in history because nothing ever happens to us, right? But it got to the point where I was thinking, you know, if I went somewhere and the activity was just off the hook, I'd be excited. But if next week I went someplace and it was off the hook, I'd be a little less excited. And after about five or six times, I'd be like, okay, this is so common, I don't even care anymore. But it's not. It's a lot more rare than what television shows or than what Facebook shows or Instagram or any of those. And that's what makes it, at least for me, still exciting because, you know, 99% of the time I go to a location and there's nothing. But then there's that one time where it's like, oh, wow, okay. You know, and this is why when we get home cases, we will tell the client, look, we're not going to be able to come in and give you an answer in one investigation unless things start flying through the room. Then that's a definitive. But because ghosts are just dead people, they don't act on cue. So, you know, it could take months or a year or more before we can gather any evidence to say, yes, you're haunted. But if we don't have anything after a year, we're going to probably tell you your house isn't haunted and there's probably a mundane reason for what's going on. So, you know, it's one of those things where you have to kind of bring the critical thinking into it rather than just assume that everything's paranormal.
Right. I interviewed Eric and CJ and Collectus Obscurium, and they are paranormal investigators in New Jersey. And they're saying the same thing as you. Like, they'll get called to a home and they go there and like, oh, did you see like the light bulb surge? Like, did you see the energy? Like, well, you know, we have to go check your wires. Did you go check this? We have to see what's happening. Like, that doesn't mean anything. But then Right. Some of these people, I think they're trying to look to turn it into either like a tourist attraction or like sell something. And they get annoyed. Like, what do you mean? This is like, please just tell me. It's like, I want you to. And it's like, well, I want to tell you it is, but also like, I need to make sure I'm doing everything right. Like, we take this seriously. And it's like, and most of the times it's not haunted. He's like, very rarely, because it's not on demand. It's not like, hey, ghost, we're here to check you out. And like, oh, you heard, you know, three creaks over 3 months. Okay, well, I'm coming here Friday at 2 p.m. What are the chances that that creak is going to happen that you heard over, you know, 3 months times 24 hours, you know, all that time is going to be very hard. But if you show several times, maybe something. So that makes it difficult. But also, like, that's the, you know, like the scientific method that I think is appreciated in something like this. I've seen those same Facebook posts of people who every time they step out their door, like everything is haunted. Do you think that some people more receptive than others, some people less scientific than others, but go stand in the woods in the middle of the night, you're probably going to freak yourself out in the dark. Every shadow, every twig crack, you're like, what is happening in the woods? Do you think as these people go here that every creak is a ghost? Do you think that every shadow they see is a ghost? Like, what do you think is causing some of these people? Now, it could just be exaggerations, but I mean, what do you think is causing that excitement for them?
So
undue excitement.
I don't know whether you noticed, but earlier I separated the terms paranormal investigator and ghost hunter.
Okay. I did.
Now, one of the reasons I do that is a paranormal investigator, and of course, this is my opinion. I mean, I've been raked over the coals for it. But to me, a paranormal investigator is somebody who goes out to find the evidence, to find what is going on, why it is going on, not to necessarily, you know, bring it to the world, but to for themselves and for those like-minded individuals who, you know, want to know. A ghost hunter to me is somebody who wants to go out and have a thrill. They want to get scared. They want to go to a haunted location and then tell everybody that they went to a haunted location. And a lot of these ghost hunters are so desperate to have something happen so they get that thrill that they will create the thrill themselves. This is another area where I've received a lot of derision, is my views on orbs. Orbs are not ghosts. why people think something this tiny is a human spirit is beyond me. I have never seen a ghost photo that I could not disprove, an orb photo. You'll look at a photograph and there's one orb, and I'm looking at it going, okay, polished table, polished lamp. There's a mirror over there. There's a painting over there with glass on it, you know, and you're just looking at all of these reflective surfaces and a flash on the camera. Guess what? You're going to get an orb there. And there's also a reason why before digital cameras, orbs were basically non-existent. You would get them every once in a while, but it was extremely rare. The orb phenomenon did not come out until digital cameras. There's got to be a reason. Did all of a sudden ghosts decide, oh, now that there's digital cameras, I'm going to be an orb? You know,
the technology improved and we are capturing them on another level now. You don't have your old Kodak with the flash sticking straight up, you know, you jam in the top.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's their way of, you know, fulfilling their I found a ghost desire, if you will, where an investigator will look at that and go, I see all of these shiny things that are reflective. So, you know, I need proof that that's a ghost. And they get their critical thinking skills going, okay, well, wait a minute. So the flash is over here. I can see the flash in the mirror over here, which directly translate to the orb being right here. You know, so it's more, you know, of looking at reasons rather than just wanting to go out and have your adrenaline spike, if right. That makes sense.
No, it definitely does. It definitely does. I wouldn't say there's so many times, there are UFO stories of people looking out their kitchen window and they're like, oh, I see a UFO over there. And there's times I'm, you know, I'm getting a glass of water or doing the dishes or whatever. And I'll look up and it's catching the reflection in the window of the light behind me. That just has you do a double take for a second. I'm like, what the? And you're like, oh, just this light behind me. But, you know, hey, if you take a picture of that and, you know, the color scheme is off and everything, you make anything look like anything. But you need to go in there with that eye of disprove, until at the very end, you're like, well, I've done everything I can and that thing is still there.
Now, I have seen a UFO. And I wish I would have had a camera at the time, because there is no doubt in my mind that it was not terrestrial. And the reason I say that is it was probably about as long as this ship. It was completely rectangular. So it wasn't rounded at all. It was just this long flying rectangle doing maybe 2 miles an hour.
So this is in California?
Yeah. Something square like that doing 2 miles an hour is going to fall, but this wasn't. And all you could hear was a little. So I have no idea what it was, but yeah, I don't believe it was terrestrial. And it had little lights on it and, you know, stuff like that. So yeah, I was kind of a believer in UFOs. Well, I shouldn't say UFOs. That just means unidentified flying object, alien craft, shall we say, from pretty much that moment on.
Well, the Pentagon just released their report the other day, their entire Arrow background they were doing on it, and UFOs do not exist at all, and they have terrestrial explanations for all of it. They're like, well, thank God. The Pentagon went out, and it's just like when I forget who just had an investigation, they investigate themselves to see if they did anything wrong, and they're like, nope, we were good. It's like, okay, great. Yeah, it's absolutely amazing. You don't want people,
really.
You can trust us, yeah. But, you know, you talk about, you know, something as big as us flying. There's the triangle crafts that they had in Phoenix, I think in 96, they talked about. There are the pilots were going off South Carolina, North Carolina or South Carolina, Admiral Graves. I'm sorry, I think I have his title wrong. But he was flying up and he just did his testimony in front of Congress. And he's like, we fly up and there's a circle with a cube inside of it and it's there waiting for us. But, you know, he's just completely mistaken. And this is just terrestrial technology that I've never seen at an air show. I've never seen paraded down Main Street or anything. Like, you know, where is this stuff then?
Yeah. Now, granted, some of the stories from years ago were because of the Skunk Works, you know, the SR-71, the F-117, the B-2 stealth bomber and things like that. Sure.
Man, you see that fly above you in real life and you know what it is and you're still like, that's a UFO. Those, the B-2. That you see it, that thing is gone, and then you're like, you hear it afterwards. You're like, man, if that thing was dropping a bomb on you, you'd be so dead for minutes before you would even hear it.
Right. But those all have one thing in common. they're all seen around Nellis Air Force Base, which is how the whole Area 51 came up, you know, because that is where the Skunk Works were, you know, and that's where the Air Force, Navy, they do all of their tests on their advanced aircraft. But then when you get to things flying over Canada or Kansas or, you know, all of these other weird things that are nowhere near Area 51 or any kind of air base, you kind of have to start going, okay. So,
The Hobby Lobby balloon in the middle of last year that took two Sidewinder missiles to shoot down, like that one?
Like that one, yeah.
Yeah, that guy was just a Boy Scout $200 balloon. Like, it took $800,000 in missiles to shoot down a Boy Scout balloon? Like, maybe we should put them in charge of our defense, though.
The pilot could have just had really bad aim.
I guess, yeah. So when they first came out with the 2017 New York Times story about the Tic Tac video and then Graves seeing the one off of the, as they would take off and run their flight patterns, with that, I did start thinking, you know, is that really military? Because if you understand the rules of engagement and then also maybe what you told them they can do, like, hey, we're not firing anything today. You see anything, make sure you call it in. Like, you can't just go shooting stuff without permission. You know, maybe it gives it more of, hey, let's play tag with these guys. Let's see what we can do with it. Let's see, you know, if we were going up against something and not have to worry about losing our $1 billion prototype.
Right.
But now you start flying over other places and, you know, you're in Canada and the U.S. and you're dealing with multiple air forces and you're over the Middle East and whatever, you know, there, it gets a lot less contained.
Right. The one thing that, as far as extraterrestrials goes, I really don't think that they have ever actually stolen Aunt Maisie and her cow, to be honest with you. Any creature that has the technology to get here wouldn't need to, first of all. And they would most likely end up, like if they had originally arrived in the United States, would most likely go and talk to somebody either at the Pentagon or, you know, somewhere in Washington. If it was in Russia, they would have gone to the Kremlin or, you know, something like that. They're not going to go, hey, we just traveled, you know, a billion light years. Let's go check out the cow. You know, that always just kind of, I thought, not unless they really wanted a ribeye.
Hey, you never know. Maybe that's what we're advertised for on like the worldwide Yelp. Like, hey, go to Earth, get a ribeye.
Yeah, exactly. So
Betty and Barney Hill were in upstate New York, rural New York, and they were abducted and taken and lost time and things like that. But always happens at night. It always happens to just one individual. It's superior technology. Like, they could come down the middle of the city and just zap somebody if they wanted to. And like, what are you going to do about it? But
yeah,
like, that never happens. It just seems like there's too many human rules happening with like UFOs with stuff like that. And it's like, okay, is that made up? Is this just like your mind shuts down? Like, people can go through horrible traumas and block it out of their heads and never recognize that it even happened. And is this part of it? Is this covering up something else that was happening? I find that interesting.
Yeah. And, you know, maybe one of these days we'll know. Our government is not exactly forthcoming with certain things, shall we say. And for anything? All we know, there could have been, you know, maybe Aunt Maisie and her cow were used for medical experiments, for all we know, from our own government. It just seems silly to me to think that, you know, creatures with that kind of technology wouldn't just go directly to the source and say, hey, you know what I mean? It's just, I don't know. Something just seems off with it.
Do you think with ghosts that there's anything with, you know, multidimensional, the whole Spider-Verse reality we live in now, you know, in either, you know, so other dimensions, other universes kind of bumping up, like bleeding through? Do you think there's anything with that? Or do you think this is all Earth-based, you know, this is it right here, and the ghost that you have, you know, you're dealing with in the world that it existed?
So quite a few years ago, there was a darkness radio event. I don't know if you're familiar with Dave Schrader.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know the name.
Yeah, Dave used to put on fantastic paranormal conventions. And he had put on a couple at the Queen Mary, and I had sat down to listen to one of the speakers, and I'm sorry, I cannot remember her name, but she was a physicist. And her theory was that what we believe we are catching in EVPs are actually not spirits, but snippets from another dimension. That what we are picking up on are actual living people that just are not within our dimension. And she said that, and this does happen quite a bit, when you get a lot of EVPs, you will hear a little pop before the EVP starts, and then another pop as it ends. And it was her theory that those pops are a break within the dimensional walls. Now, whether that's true or not, I don't know, but to me, it's a feasible explanation for some of it, not all of it, but some of it. So yeah, there probably are other dimensions, but you know, what exactly those other dimensions entail, I really couldn't even begin to understand.
There was another interview that I did at the same gentleman from San Diego, and he was bringing up that during the Vietnam War, when they started with night vision goggles, they were using this red phosphorus type, and they had to discontinue the version they were using because everybody was seeing UFOs and things that weren't there. And then they moved on to a different type of red phosphorus and then eventually to the green type. But they had to stop, I guess, whatever mixture or whatever technology they're using with that, because people were, I don't know, seeing too much of the real world, seeing too much of the other world, seeing too much of something.
Have they followed up to see if these people are in mental institutions?
Yeah, I don't know. So I asked, I was like, well, where can we get this? Like, can I go to an army surplus store and get this? And, you know, apparently they're all tens of thousands of dollars on eBay.
You know, oh, so really you can actually still get them. So they weren't toxic or anything like that.
Apparently they weren't toxic. They were just showing a little too much of the truth. I don't know.
Interesting.
Yeah. So during your paranormal investigations, you had the rumbling in your ear, which is very legitimate. What were some of the highlights? What's some of the juicy stuff? What have you seen that has really made you question, I guess, reality? So
visual is extremely rare. Now, I have seen an apparition, but only one, and only half of it. There used to be a place up in Clovis, California called Wolf Manor. It has since been torn down. It was on some of the TV shows. But my buddy Bob and I were breaking down our equipment, and we were in what was called the Black Room. The reason is it was painted all black because Todd Wolf, the one who owned it, would turn it into a haunted house. And at Halloween time, he would bring the Clovis High School in to be the scare actors. And then whatever money he made on it, he would give to the high school drama department to kind of help, you know, fund them. So Bob and I were in there and we're breaking down our equipment. There was a table that was facing the wall. I was facing out. Bob was facing the wall. And all of a sudden he goes, and I kind of looked at him with this weird look. I'm like, what the hell was that? And he goes, dude, there was a face that just appeared right in front of me. And I was literally right in front of him and I didn't see anything. All right. So I'm kind of like going, yeah, right, Bob. I'm standing right here. I didn't see anything. So I turned to our buddy Tom, who had just walked in the room, and he was just kind of off to my left. And I look up and I'm like, so Tom, do you believe what? I look over and I just stared. Bob looks over at me and goes, what's wrong with you? Tom, what's, and he does the exact same thing. Here, both of us are looking at a solid pair of jeans, tennis shoes, and a belt. Nothing else. No torso above the jeans. And it was literally as solid as both Bob and I were. And as we're standing there, just kind of our mouths agape going, what the? It just vanished. That is the only time I've actually ever seen a spirit. However, the most spectacular thing that ever happened to me was the first time I spent the night on Alcatraz. My team, it was myself, Bob, Ash, and Laurel. That was our team, but there were only four of us. And we had been in the medical isolation ward. And we kept hearing chairs moving. So we went in and we sat down, did an EVP session, didn't seem like we were getting anything. We walked out, heard the chairs move around again, walked back in. The chairs were now in a different place. Sat down, did an EVP session. Again, we didn't feel like anything was going on. We walked back out, heard the chairs a third time. We walked back in. Now the chairs were back in the exact same spot where they were when we originally went in. So we thought, all right, we're going to sit down one more time, but if we don't get anything, we're out of here. So Bob is asking questions. And at one point, Bob says, you know, if you don't want us here, just let us know and we'll leave. So Ash at the time was about 320 to 350 pounds. We were sitting in folding metal chairs. And those are the chairs that had been moving around when we couldn't see them, but we could hear them. So we're sitting there right after Bob says, just let us know and we'll leave. Ash's chair with him sitting in it goes, slides back about 3 feet, hits the wall. He gets thrown out of his chair. And at the same time the chair was moving, we hear, get out.
Wow.
So we were like, yeah, I think we'll get out.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, we definitely left, but that's probably the most spectacular thing that's ever happened. I've never had anything happen even close to that since.
I'm picturing like the Scooby-Doo when they get scared, they're kind of running in place and you see the dust flying behind them and finally they take off. That's how I'm picturing how quickly you guys left.
We may have done that. Yeah.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah. Alcatraz was something else. We spent the night on Alcatraz twice. The first year we were there was 2009 or 2010, I can't remember exactly which. And the activity was off the hook. The following year, we got very little activity. We did catch some of the same spirits, two of them. One of them was a child that sounded, well, it was somebody who sounded like a child, who said his name was Jacob. And then another was a nurse who had passed away from a typhoid epidemic down in the original pit, which was the original jail during the Civil War. And we caught her both years talking. So, but other than that, the second year, there wasn't much going on. So, but I would love to go back.
Do you find any of the experiences that you have are tied to like seasonal or, you know, like moons or, you know, whatever it might be?
So the Queen Mary, my team actually had an office on board in room B332. And we were literally down there pretty much every night. It got to the point where we were so well known that security would see us coming and they just go here and they just hand us the keys. Because they knew we weren't going to do anything to harm the ship or any of, you know, we weren't going to break anything. We have nothing but respect for the Queen Mary. And we discovered that, yeah, there's a little girl by the name of Jackie. She's about 5 or 6 years old. We believe she passed away sometime in 1946 during the Bride and Baby cruises after World War II. And she is relatively vocal. However, we discovered over about a 2 to 3 year period that around December 9th of every year, she gets really active. And I mean, to the point where you cannot go down to the ship, say the 8th, 9th or 10th without her being everywhere, without her talking audibly, not even an EVP, but talking audibly. So we were like, well, this is weird. I wonder why. And then when I was doing research for my Ghost of the Queen Mary, I was like, oh, well, hell, the last day the ship, the Queen Mary, was ever in service was December 9th, which correlates directly to the time when Jackie is her most active, December 8th, 9th, and 10th. So
it's fascinating. I thought you were going to say you found a birthday. You know, that's fascinating that the last, that the ship's energy is transferring to this little girl, or she, you know, she's able to manipulate or do whatever with it.
Yeah. Well, it might have something to do with the fact that she was already a spirit on the ship when the ship was retired. So for her, it may have been like, no, I don't want to stop sailing type of thing. I mean, we really don't know. So, but yeah, we love going down there around that time period because Jackie's something else.
Hey, it sounds like if you go down on December 9th, like that's the time to go. That sounds
Yeah.
fascinating.
Definitely. So
have you ever had an experience where maybe you rethought your career purpose here of like, maybe I don't want to do this anymore?
No.
No? Okay. No, well, okay, no bad ghost or anything?
No. So we do not think ghosts are demons. Ghosts are just people. They're just deceased people. But we do know that demons exist. We had one case that was given to us. I'm not going to say his name because he's very well known. His aunt and uncle were the Warrens. And he gave us a case with this girl who was just obsessed with him. I'm not going to go into the whole thing because we just don't have the time. But let's just say that the most, those of us who dealt with the case, and we ended up dropping the case because she would not go see a mental health professional, we're actually really careful about things like that. We told her before we could take the case, you have to be cleared by a mental health professional because we weren't going to go in and start, you know, investigating. You know, you're saying you're possessed. Her sister was saying she was possessed without knowing that you are mentally stable, because we could make things worse, and that's not something we wanted to do. So we're really careful about how we approach home cases. But let's just say that things progressed to the point where we started getting a little bit nervous about things that would happen. So we completely backed out, and I'm not even going to go into it, but Christmas Day, let's just say that something happened to the last three of us that hung on to the case longest that we don't ever want to happen again.
Oh, all right. So Skinwalker Ranch, you know, there's the TV show, and, you know, it's a famous place, and Bigelow owned it, and apparently there's activity. There's a lot of things happening there. There have been scientists who've talked about like this piggybacking, that as they leave the property, something attaches to them and follows them home. And experiences at their once quiet home are now bubbling up with activity. Have you ever, you know, experienced this? Have you ever researched something like this? Have you run across this?
Oh, I've researched it. And I have tried. Boy, have I tried to get something to attach itself to me and come home with me. And I cannot do it. And again, this is my own belief, and I'm not saying it's, you know, definitive. I believe that things attaching to you are just another way of people saying, I'm a warrior type of thing. If spirits were that strong, we'd all be attached. We'd all have a spirit attached to us. There is a certain television personality who once a week gets possessed. And I'm thinking, dude, if you are so weak-willed that a simple ghost can possess you, stop doing it. If ghosts could possess people, guess what? We'd all be possessed by ghosts. I mean, think about the millions upon millions upon millions upon millions of people who have died over the years who may be ghosts. If they could just simply possess us, why wouldn't they? It's just one of those things that, you know, none of it was really that talked about until television. After television, all of a sudden people were having attachments. People were having, you know, ghosts come and visit them and dropping things on their heads. And, you know, it's just, I've been doing this for a very long time and I have not found any evidence. And you're talking to somebody who has literally invited ghosts to come with me. And they will not do it. Maybe I smell, you know, but I mean, if after, you know, a few, you know, 20, 30,000 hours of investigating, I cannot get a single ghost to attach itself to me while being invited. I mean, maybe it's me. I don't know.
We could try some new methods here.
Yeah, something.
So this question just popped in my head. Say pass if you want to not even answer it. I believe it's Pentecostal churches where people speak in tongues and they, you know, the spirit of the Lord inspires them and they start going through, you know, religious, what, enlightenment, whatever it might be. I'm sorry, I'm not fully versed in their entire aspect of their religion. Do you have any thoughts on that? Is this just the belief in their religion that they're experiencing? Do you think that there is something more happening?
So I was about half a heartbeat away from the seminary when I got out of grade school. Luckily, women were prettier than priests. We'll just put it that way. But I was brought up on a relatively strict religious background. So I've done actually quite a bit of research into religions and things like that. And like with the Catholics, I am now what would be called a fallen Catholic, because it was like, all right, you can't eat meat on Fridays. Okay, go ahead and eat meat on Fridays. No, you can't eat meat on Fridays. Yes, you can. No, you can't. And it's like, look, if you guys can't even figure out your own tenet, how are you going to tell me, you know, what's going on? You have people in religions now who follow the King James Version Bible. That is the main Bible, which is fine, except for the fact that it was adapted by a king who wanted to put the Church of England foremost and in front. So it's got things that were changed. The Douay-Rheims Bible, which is the Catholic Bible, has books in it that no other Bible has. So you have all of these religions telling you different things while saying they're all true. And it's just one of those things where, you know, if somebody asks me a question, I'm one of those people who I'll just blurt it out. You know, I'm very opinionated as far as, you know, things like that. Years and years and years ago, I went, let's just say this girl was really, really cute. Okay. And I had asked her out and she said, okay, let's go out on Sunday. And I was like, absolutely. So I went to pick her up and it turns out we were going to church.
Lucky you.
And yeah. It was one of those churches where they were speaking in tongues. Okay. And I mean, I got in there and none of it made any sense. Some people were drooling and they were doing this and doing that. And I'm just like looking around going, wait, what? But I kind of, you know, stayed around to see what was up. And once they started or stopped speaking in tongues, they all sat there and listened to the pastor or whatever you want to call him. And so I'm listening for a while, and all of a sudden he starts calling the Virgin Mother a whore. He starts saying that Joseph was a pimp, you know, and just all of this stuff. And I'm just kind of like, you know, but by this time I was already kind of out of the whole religious thing. I have my own beliefs in God. God and I are mates, as you know, the term goes. So I do believe, you know, I have a strong belief in God, but not a strong belief in religions. And it dawned on me. It's like, okay, well, why are you speaking in tongues and then throwing out everything, calling yourself a Christian sect while bashing everything Christian? So whether that was Pentecostal or not, I didn't stick around to find out. But it was just one of those things where I was really bummed because, like I said, she was really cute.
That was a deal breaker, though.
Yeah, that was a deal breaker. Yeah.
Yeah.
And her family was wealthy to boot. Oh.
You could go back. You could overlook it now. You're like, nah, you know, it's not so bad.
Yeah, I don't think my wife would like that.
Yeah, well, yes. Mrs. Kloon would not be happy. That was not part of it. Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, that was not in a Bible that I ever read. So that's very interesting. It almost seems, you know, like a front for a religion. And almost like a demon, you know, the Satanism
or sect. Cult or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting.
The way I look at people's beliefs, whatever they want to believe is fine with me. You know, my buddy just recovered from inoperable cancer. I know that, but it's a long story. I won't go into it. And because of that, he found God and he has gone really heavy on the God side. And I was like, okay, that's fine. He goes, yeah, you know, there's no such thing as ghosts. Every ghost is a demon. I'm like, okay, that's your belief, not mine. Well, God doesn't want us. I'm like, Bob, I'm a recovering drug addict who woke up one day and just stopped. No withdrawals, no nothing. God just told me no more. Right. And then God told me, hey, start writing. I write ghost books. If he didn't want me doing it, I wouldn't be doing it. I'd probably have OD'd a long time ago. So that's why I say, you know, I have my own beliefs, but you know, he gave me all of his equipment, so I'm not too upset.
Like, oh, that kind of worked out. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now pushing your beliefs on someone else, that, you know, that gets to be that slippery slope, and, you know, push back. And
yeah,
you know,
I think we can all... I mean, if somebody wants to be an atheist, let them be an atheist. If they want to believe in God, let them believe in God, let them believe what they want. It's their choice. It's, you know, and there's nothing wrong with that choice.
So yeah, this was the good old days of, at the dinner table, you didn't speak of politics or religion, could just end up turning into an argument. Hey, we can all be friends if we leave these two things alone. But, you know, unfortunately, it kind of seeps in from everywhere. And
yeah, unfortunately, religion, I don't really talk about politics. Well, it's fun to wear spaghetti. Never mind.
It's tough. It's infiltrated like everything. It is, man, it's madness out there sometimes. On whatever side you're on, it's just like, wow, all right, sure. So what books are you working on? What do you have coming up? If somebody wanted to do a home visit, have you do a home visit? Do you take on new clients? Like, how does that work?
All they have to do is contact Planet Paranormal. And I think it still goes to Bob, but then he'll just forward it to me. We do have a fairly extensive preliminary form that we require people to fill out. I mean, it does get rather personal. It goes into drug use, medications, alcohol. You know, we had a home case quite a few years ago, and they did fill out the preliminary. And when I was going through the preliminary report, the client was saying that the spirits would play with her feet and tug on her feet and massage her feet and things like that. So I started checking into the medications and found out that the medications she was on were for restless leg syndrome.
That is not a spirit.
Yeah. So my first thought was, okay. And, you know, I didn't make up my mind because, you know, I didn't want to skew it either way. I was just thinking, all right, chances are this has something to do with her restless leg syndrome. So we went up and we did the investigation. And just as an FYI, we never charge, ever. If a paranormal investigator is charging, they are a fraud. Because how do you prove something that can't be proved? So, you know, it's one of those things. I always warn people, if a paranormal investigator is saying, hey, I'm going to charge you for this, run. Because they're going to charge you for it. Then they're going to tell you have a ghost, whether you do or not, and then charge you to get rid of it. So
I've seen that movie, Ghostbusters.
Yeah, there you go. All right. So anyway, we go up there and we didn't really, you know, sense anything. And it was a long drive. It was about a 700-800 mile drive to go up for this investigation, rent a hotel, the whole shebang. We told them, all right, so, and it was a woman and her granddaughter. So we did the investigation. We told her, okay, it'll take us a few days to, you know, get any evidence if we got any, but we'll send you a report as soon as, you know, we have anything to tell you. We get halfway from Jackson, California, to where we were staying, and we get a call from the woman saying that we made things worse, that now things were flying around the room, vases were being aimed at her and her granddaughter, and that it was just out of control. So we said, all right, we'll be right back. No, you do not come back. They would not let us come back. So we're like, okay, well, this is weird. I mean, if we made things worse, wouldn't you want us to come back and see if we could? But they said, absolutely no. If you show up, we will call the police, yada, yada, yada. So we found out later that her granddaughter was an avid ghost show watcher, that her granddaughter had been telling everybody at her high school, she was 14, that their house was extremely haunted, and that they were going to have ghost hunters up there who were going to put them on TV. So we were kind of like, okay. And because, I mean, when somebody tells you that things are flying around the house, the first thought is, what? Because to be honest with you, after 30 some odd years of doing this, I have never seen that. Not once. So we were a little bit leery as soon as she said, no, don't come back, because we weren't that far away. You know, so this is the reason we do the preliminary report. Boy, I just went off on a tangent there, didn't I?
No, that was perfect. It sounds like the way you begin your investigations is just like I was talking about Eric and CJ from Collectus, that they find out their entire backgrounds. And it's like, we don't want to waste your time. We don't want to waste our time. We want to make sure we're on the same page. And if there is any type of, you know, if you're taking medication, it doesn't disqualify you. But I also need to know that if, you know, you're on bipolar medication, like, is this stuff happening when you're not on your medication? And not that it's not happening, but like, right. Maybe that's not for us.
Exactly.
Right.
You know, and here's the thing. We've had a couple cases that we were pretty sure right from the start were not paranormal. One of them was a Marine Sergeant Major. And he had said some really odd things, that celebrity lookalikes were following him, that somebody had drilled holes in his ceiling and put cameras in there, and that they were all spirits from beyond. So when we went down for the preliminary, we were thinking to ourselves, okay, what are we getting ourselves into? We go in there, and he actually turned out to be a really nice guy, but we were thinking, okay, this guy's kind of off his noodle. We go in there, and there's literally trophies along his wall from all of his martial arts competitions in the Marines that he won. So we're like, oh God, I hope this guy does not get violent. Okay. So after the interview, we realized that there was something not quite right mentally with him. So when we got back the following day, we called Camp Pendleton, which is where he was retired, but he was still under the care of the Marines. Well, it turns out that, I don't know if you remember, but during the Gulf War, there was Oliver North was in a helicopter convoy, and one of the helicopters right next to him had exploded, right, and blown up. Well, it turns out that this Marine Sergeant Major was in the helicopter next to the one that blew up. And he had his best friends were in the helicopter that blew up, and he ended up with major PTSD. So once we contacted the base, we were put on to his doctor, who said, thank you, we will check and see what needs to be done. And about a month later, we got a letter saying, thank you, he is getting the help that he needed. He was off his medication and yada, yada, yada. So, you know, we don't deal with just ghosts. If we find a mundane reason, we're not just going to say, oh, sorry, no ghosts, we're out of here. We'll try and help them even further if we can. Like, you know, like with this Marine, we weren't going to just bail on him.
Right.
He needed help, and we were in a position to where we could get him the help. So, you know, it's for us, it's more about helping people and not just the ghosts.
Yeah, that's great. Prior to the PTSD part of the story, I was very excited about celebrity clones following him, and I needed him on my podcast. But now that it took that angle, I'm glad he got the help that he needed. And I think that's really awesome that they reached out to you guys.
Tom Cruise had been following him everywhere he went, which we thought was kind of cool until he said, yeah, but he's a clone. We're like, ooh, okay.
You never know. You never know.
That's true. This is the U.S. government.
Yeah. You see interesting C-SPAN videos, and people look like they kind of have masks, and there's wrinkles right around the neckline. And it's like, it doesn't really seem too normal.
Yeah.
Very interesting stuff. But Brian, I do appreciate your time. Can you tell me what you have in the works?
So right now, and the manuscript will be going in at the end of this month, Haunted Heart of Los Angeles. That one was a little interesting because I got to do a bunch of research on the Hotel Cecil. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but
I know the name, yeah.
That's where Elisa Lam had disappeared for 19 days and was found in the water tank.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Later on. That's an interesting one. A lot of people don't know how Dodger Stadium came to be, or the Dodger Stadium is actually quite haunted. So I managed to get that in there. There's really interesting stuff about Griffith Park, the zoo, and everything else. So I'm kind of thrilled about that one, although that was a challenge because I was right in the middle of writing another one. My publisher said, stop writing that one and write this one. We need this one done. So I'm like, okay, thanks. You just maybe missed 4 months. So that one's in the works. I'm also working on a non-paranormal book, Murder and Mayhem Hollywood, which has some of the more grisly, unfortunately, serial killers and things like that in Hollywood history. And I am working on Haunted Northern California as a companion to my Haunted Southern California. So,
okay, awesome.
A few things in works.
Yeah, you're welcome back anytime. When you finish the Hollywood one, though, I definitely want you to come back. I want to hear some serial killer stuff.
Well, look up the Sunset Strip Killers. That one is like, what? Let's just say what the man did with a frozen head is beyond belief.
Oh.
Yeah.
Have you?
That was my thought, too.
Yeah. What's the Hollywood hotel, that hotspot, the Chateau?
Oh, the Chateau Marmont.
Yeah. You ever do anything with that or weird stuff over there?
I have a book titled Hollywood Obscura. It's a little different than most of my books. Most of my books are location-based. Hollywood Obscura is actually people-based. And I did write about the Chateau Marmont in relation to, oh my God, the Blues Brother. My brain just stopped working.
Oh.
John Belushi.
Yeah, yep.
Yeah, because John Belushi haunts there.
Really?
Which is kind of interesting. Yeah, that's where he was found. O'Dean was at the Chateau. So
he still haunts there to this day.
He haunts there to this day. Yeah.
Wow. Fascinating.
And most people are familiar with the Black Dahlia.
Mm-hmm.
I do have the Black Dahlia in there, and I cannot take credit for the theory, but I do believe that the person that I wrote about as far as being the killer actually is the killer. And no, it is not Hodel.
Mm.
He just hated his father. So,
okay. Wow. All right. I'm going to have to check that one out. That's awesome. What is the best place for people to find you?
Best place to buy the books would be on Amazon. Just put Brian Clune and all of my books will come up. And it's also the cheapest place to buy them. So, and anybody that is in the Los Angeles metropolitan area, if you want to come down and get a signature, I will be at the LA County Fair every weekend selling my books. And that way you can get a signature. Then we could talk ghosts or whatever you guys want.
Awesome. Okay. And you're on Instagram, right?
I am.
Okay. What's the handle for that?
Author Brian Clune.
Okay. Awesome. I will put all of this in the show notes. I sincerely appreciate your time. I had so much fun with this. I hope you did too.
Oh, and, absolutely.
Yeah. Again, two Brians and I, how can we not have fun?
Yeah, exactly. And
I kept cutting you off though, so I'm sorry.
Oh, don't worry about it. If you haven't figured it out yet, I'll just continue on with once you're done. So, yeah, not a problem. I like to talk.
Yeah, we jumped in. We'd agree. This is a great episode. I sincerely appreciate it.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Anytime you want to come back, open door policy.
Sounds good. Thank you.
All right. Take care. Have a great night.
You as well.
All right. Bye.
All right, everyone. That was our show. Don't forget to leave a review on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you stream your podcast. Like and follow the podcast on Facebook and Instagram to stay up to date on all things wild and weird. Check out the links in the show notes for more information on our guest. The biggest support you can offer is to tell everyone about the podcast. Until next time.